What a winner. I bought this new house. And it's in Green Acres on top of a mountain. About it's got like 60 acres with it, which, yeah, right. Like, I need 60 acres. But anyway, and man, does the wind blow there. Holy smokes. This is a true story. I've got a 4,000 foot long paved driveway. And then I've got like 10,000 square feet of shop. There's like three shops with probably 30,000 square feet of pavement. And then this great big round cobblestone driveway that's probably 10,000 square feet. I don't even know. I'm just kind of guessing at the numbers. But I can tell you something, folks. It is a snow magnet. And there is wind up there. Ooh, baby. And I've gone through this drifting, and man, I mean, I'm telling you, these drifts are so big. So I've got I've got a newer car, and you know how, I hate to admit it, but all these cars are nothing but plastic, absolutely nothing but plastic. So I blast a drift, and guess what? A piece of the plastic, like air dam up front that draws air in, breaks, and then my maintenance guy, who I think I'm going to be bringing into the coin shop too, because he's just brilliant. I mean, he's probably one of the best hires that I've ever had. He's the coolest, smartest, you know, most well-balanced, respectful, kind, you know, gentleman around. And he tells me that part of the, part of the car sitting on top of the snowdrift. Anyhow, I'm kind of embarrassed to even be telling you that. See, that's the problem. My wife says I'm too transparent, which is a nice way to say I have a big mouth. And I tell people way too many personal things. And so that's the kind of stuff that I tell people that affects the way, you know, I admit mistakes and imperfections far too readily. And like I said, my wife's not the biggest fan of it. I'm seeing if I can get a picture of the car plastic here. But anyway, my wife just gets tired of it. One thing, I'm like a social butterfly. And my wife gets annoyed when, like, whenever we go to a restaurant or something, I get really involved in people's lives. I'll start talking to, you know, the waitress or the waiter or whoever it may be. And I'm really super interested in people's lives. And I love to share God with them, but I like to do it in a way. I had a person that I know that we were having this conversation the other day about sharing Christ, and it's it's about lifestyle evangelism, right? And I personally believe that that the odds of walking up to somebody and sharing Christ, having them drop to their knees and accept Christ, is very low. Weirdly enough, that's how I came to Christ. But I obviously had been prepared, right? So I'm one of the flukes, and I was, you know, one of those where they, you know, I just don't fit. So once that happened, I was in the college dorms. Well, short story long, as I always do. I had a very long, short life. I was 18 and, or whatever I was, 18, 19. No, I was 18 when I went to college. And I've explained, my parents dropped me off at a runaway home in eighth grade, and then I bounced through the system, and, you know all that story. And, And then all of a sudden, all my friends were going to college, and I felt like I was really missing out. Well, at least they weren't. They were kind of like people I thought were my friends, and I learned when I got to college they kind of weren't. They were party buddies. And when you're in high school, you have everything in common. High school relationships, you know, you think these are going to last forever. It's never going to change. Why do you think that way? Well, you have absolutely everything in common. You get up at the same time every day. You go to the same location every day. A lot of times when you're younger, you ride the same bus every day. You have the same classes. You have the same sporting events. You have, you know, you get the picture. You have all just this incredible amount of commonality when you're in high school. And so you're just positive that these relationships are going to last forever. Well, one thing that used to drive me nuts, I've never been a womanizer player type guy, you know, whoopee ding, but I've had friends who were, and they, you know, that was their thing. And I always liked hanging out with the guys, you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm, you know, I'm definitely not opposed to the opposite sex. I'm definitely not you know, one of those, but I just like friends, and I like to hang out with friends, and you know, I do, and I used to like to do that, and then, you know, I just found out quickly in college that that's not everybody's thing, and I had a couple situations come up where I even joined a fraternity that knew that I kind of was an unguarded soul. When you have children, you know, as a parent, it's your job to do a lot of things, including guarding them. You're the guardian of the gateway. You're also the disciplinarian. You have to execute punishment, and you also have to execute discipline. Discipline is really important. Discipline is an education where you constantly, continuously are teaching, helping them grow and things like that. And I just didn't have that. So I had to figure out a lot of things on my own. I'd accepted Christ in third grade, completely forgot until I reaccepted Christ when I was 18. And then God brought the memories back of my accepting him when I was in third grade. It was kind of a wild deal. It was like, as soon as I accepted him, boom, it just came flooding back that I remembered, you know, that I had done that. And, so that's, you know, just to finish it up real quick, I had gotten to the point where I went to college because other people were. I'd really never had to take an SAT or anything like that. Later on, they had me take some tests, and they were like, you know, wow. I mean, obvious, I scored tremendously high on them at one point. At one point in my life when I was, you know, studying mathematics all the time, I think my brain was working pretty good, and I could score, like on IQ tests, I could score at the significant genius level. A lot of that had to do, I think, with logic, spatial relations. You know, when you're doing math all the time, I mean, real math, a lot of people who have, you know, never experienced collegiate math don't understand. You know, people who've had struggled through algebra, you know, don't understand what 9 quarters of calculus is like. It's actually, it becomes not calculus. It becomes some weird alien creature that, you know, whoever thought of this stuff had something seriously wrong with their head. And so anyway, I went down that road, found out shortly that guys that I actually thought were my friends, I learned were not. I got, believe it or not, suicidal. I was, you know, I just thought my life had no meaning at all. I had actually even purchased a $50 gun, which back then was, you know, in the 80s, It wasn't the nicest gun around, we'll put it that way, but it didn't matter. I bought it from a friend, and I, for some reason, this is the weirdest thing. I decided I was going to commit suicide on a Sunday, and isn't that weird? I don't know why. It wasn't a school day or something. I don't know what I was thinking. But, you know, as what really started to get to me was early on in life, I'd gotten this notion that if you committed suicide, you went to hell. Okay. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, God doesn't mention those kinds of things, right? But then we get to like Megiddo, where we have all these men up on a mountaintop who, you know, stave off the Romans for 3 solid years. And then when the Romans finally get to him, the Romans spent 3 years building a ramp. I mean, you talk about tenacity. It was really weird. With the extent that they went to get at these Jews that were on top of this mountain. And it was a butte, I guess I'd call it, being from Montana. And it was, there was only one way up, and it was a trail, and they had blocked the trail, tore it out or whatever. And they had harbored up on top of the mountain. They had apparently enough supplies to last a very, very long time. And so the Jews below got the Romans got the Jews to do the work of building this ramp. 3 solid years of hauling dirt to build a ramp, setting up massive camps where all they did is they had generals literally stationed there. I mean, you think of how crazy this is, just to get a few men. Why? Because they were Roman and they wanted to make a point that nobody, and they meant nobody, you know, gets away from them. And these Jews knew the minute that those Romans got their hands on them, they knew it was going to be a bad, bad day. So they waited apparently until the Romans got real close, and then they committed suicide. And apparently all of them but one, apparently, you know, there had to be the last one that committed his own suicide. And I never did understand fully, you know, what, or Masada is what I think it was called, actually. Masada, not Megiddo. Megiddo's where Armageddon will be. Masada is the big mountain. But, you know, all of those Jews committed suicide. Now, their logic, which was quite sound, was they had to do it because the minute the Jews or the Romans got a hold of them, it was just going to get ugly. I mean, like I've mentioned recently, the torture techniques of the Romans were, you know, beyond. It's hard to do shows on stuff like that because I can't tell you what they did because it was so heinous and so ruthless and so destructive. And you follow me, right? I mean, it was so bad that I don't, it's, you know, it's kind of like speaking about the acts that are committed in the darkness. You just don't do it. And Romans had gotten where they just, how do you get a thrill out of inflicting insane, tremendous levels of pain on a human being? I mean, why would the Romans be so good at that and so eager to do so? I don't know. That because they got trained up that way, and the ones that became Roman soldiers, centurions, they it was do or die. I've read some stuff where they'd get guys in there that weren't willing to conduct some of the sick activities that were required of them, and so they would get to undergo the unbelievable torturous, you know. Everything was done through intimidation and fear, and And that, unfortunately, folks, is the history of socialism. And then you get like this AOC, Alexandria, whatever, Cortez, who basically, folks, she's a full throttle ignoramus. She doesn't know anything, and she's pumping out this socialistic rubbish. And we've got people, we'll call them citizens, that are absolutely pro, you know, socialism. Socialism is now the most desired form of government in America. College students want it. Everybody wants it. I mean, folks, you and I hope both understand how tremendously destructive the history of socialism has been. What the young buckaroos say, those are the college students, is, oh, yeah, yeah. But it was, they'll say, well, that was socialism, but it wasn't executed properly. Well, folks, how do you steal somebody's money properly? How do you steal somebody's money willingly? Continuous brainwashing? I mean, and the Christian audience has got to fight and fight and fight and fight to protect their wealth. You know, Cortez is, you know, she's starting with a 70% tax at the high end, going up to, and then bragging about our historical 90-plus percent taxation rate, which FDR had in place. Which, by the way, is true. Many people don't believe it's true, but it is. Okay, I mean, it's. Can you imagine that? Well, it was FDR's way of attacking and incarcerating his political opponents. He used it as a method of incarcerating those that disagreed with him. FDR is the reason we have the problems we do today. I want you to think about that. FDR is the reason we are experiencing the problems we are today in America, period. I mean, there's the Islamic issues that Jefferson warned us about. And, you know, you've got Abraham Lincoln with the Emancipation Proclamation, where you had the North still hating the South and the South still hating the North, and, you know, the Confederate States that wanted, you know, they still wanted their autonomy, and fiat currency was created by Abraham Lincoln. And but in the 1870s, we reduced our debt. In the 1870s, folks, we had so much going on in this country. We had so much money in tariff income that we had, there's excise taxes and tariffs. Excise taxes are taxes that get paid when you create something and ship it out. Tariffs are a tax that are paid by those shipping items into your country. We had an excise tariff surplus that was, percentage-wise, based on GDP, greater than anything we've ever had before or since. So they use that to pay off the debt that Abraham Lincoln had created. And then we, you know, and then there was a lot of people that didn't like that. And so they began to falsely make people think that banks were, well, they falsely folded banks. They confiscated income and wealth, and there was a whole means going on, and people demanded decentralization of the banks. They were tired of these great big banks. They wanted small localized banks again. We'd been through the Wildcat Bank era. We'd been through the state bank era. In both cases, the states and the wildcats, the private stuff, they issued their own currency, supposedly backed by precious metals. In both cases, bankruptcy ensued. And people obviously got a little bit tired of that And so they wanted a special banking system that made sense, that was protected by the government. Well, the problem is the Federal Reserve Act was created by these gentlemen who created the Federal Reserve Act, which was not palatable to the American public. However, Williams Jennings Bryan, who was a populist, bought in. They got him to buy in, and then he went and he convinced the rest of the people that it was okay. They passed that law, the Federal Reserve Act, the new Federal Reserve Act, on New Year's or on Christmas Eve in an emergency meeting of Congress of 11 of them at midnight when no one was around to oppose it. That is how and when the Federal Reserve Act came into play. That is when the beginning of the end began. However, what ensued after that was the Roaring Twenties, because they had introduced debt. Everything changed overnight, folks. Before that, debt was just a non-issue. After that, debt, everybody got debt. Rates were low. Money was pouring, flowing like water, and a lot of people just did really well, and they went and they borrowed money. The banks were told to just hand it out like candy. Everybody borrowed money. They got everybody in debt, and they were able to get everybody, about 85% of the people, to turn in their gold, willingly, ignorantly, and unknown. They wanted to collect the gold because it was a true asset. Gold and silver are real money. They always have been. They always, always will be. Okay? So just understand that it's never, ever going to change. The Bible's very clear, if you've ever studied what the Bible says about gold and silver as money. It's pretty obvious. You start to look up the words gold and silver. I mean, there's just no doubt. In the Bible, gold and silver are synonymous with money. There is no difference. There's not even two different words. Okay? So you're living in a world now that has been completely transformed through sin. Okay? So gold and silver are money. I'll just leave it at that. In Hebrew, there's no word for money. Every biblical passage that refers to money is a unit of weight in gold. I should say a unit of weight in gold, silver, or another precious metal like copper. Copper was a precious metal at the time. Copper is still a kind of a precious metal. We sell bags. People will buy bags of pennies. And we have crazy things for sale. Like, if you don't want to spend a whole bunch of money, but you just want to have something to put aside that actually will grow in value, folks, buy a bag. We have bags and bags of wheat pennies. Okay. Remember the wheat backs? We sell them by the bag. Okay. 5,000 pennies to a bag. Usually, a few cents a piece, 3-4 cents a piece. And then there's like the San Francisco mints. You can get a bag of San Francisco mints for, I don't know, $300-$400 a bag. Then there's the teens and the 20s and whatnot. We've got all that stuff. We even have bags of Canadian pennies from the era when it was pure copper, 100% pure copper. The U.S. Typically alloyed their coinage for hardness. So you can buy that if you want. There's a lot of things you can buy just for fun. You can buy a little bit of silver, a little bit of copper, put it back. About 10 years ago, during the silver and gold boom, or 6-8 years ago, whatever it was, copper went crazy. Copper went up like 6-7-fold its value. Will it happen again? Yes, it's going to happen again. Folks, we're sitting in a crazy, crazy time. Simply put, I've got on my mind all this. I was listening to Trump speak. I moved to this place out in the country where television is a commodity. I mean, you can hardly get it on this little dish from this company called Patera. Patera advertises 25 megabytes per second of download speed. Then when you call them, they say, oh, sorry, we can only give you 15. And then when you get it, you know, the service is really bad. And, you know, it just, and then you got XM and Sirius that lose your password. And I just love information. And so it's just difficult to get out there. And but the bottom line is those things that are biblically attributed as true wealth is gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, and precious stones. So instead of going on and on, I'm going to do something that I keep talking about doing, and I'm going to just get right down to biz. So let's talk about the fundamentals of precious metals and why reasons to own precious metals. Why do you want it? Okay, so this I'm starting a little earlier than I normally do in the show. I'm going to buzz real quickly through the stuff that I've hit on before, okay? Important. The world's economic and political. Now, remember, I'm repeating what I've said before, but I want to just build the momentum. The world's economic and political climates were permanently transformed on 9/11 of 01, okay? Our financial markets and currencies are, right now, folks, they're melting down globally, which is imminently impacting the U.S. markets, okay? So the collapse in world currencies is pumping us up. It's bringing dollars home, so on and so forth. It is artificial. We've discussed the falsity of the indexes. I'll be touching on that here in a second. It's important to understand. How do I know? One thing, my wife and I were just looking at doing some travel. We love to travel overseas. Why? A big part of it is I'm always looking for that place. Maybe, you know, that place to go that maybe if things just get crazy enough, maybe, you know, I mean, I've been everywhere from the Dominican Republic to Costa Rica, of course, the Caribbean, the Middle East, Asia, Australia, you know, New Zealand, all the, you know, the South Pacific. Of course, everybody's been to Canada. And I could go down the list of all the different places. It's unbelievable. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know what the future of America holds. I know that we're struggling. I mean, we're hyper-regulating everything. We've got countries like China and Mexico importing, this fentanyl drug, which is, you know, because it's not a drug that's illegal to manufacture there, and you know, whatever. You get the point. So, our markets and currencies, they are melting down. They just are. You're losing spending power. As an American, you are, you're hurting. Now, there's guys that have very successful businesses that are, you know, construction is just on fire out in Coeur d'Alene. Builders are backed up. Architects are backed up. So on and so forth. Precious metals have proven to be the timeless, permanent, respected, and pinnacle forms. Now think about that. Timeless, right? Precious metals have proven to be timeless. Okay, timeless. The Bible starts in Genesis 2, and then it ends in Revelation 21, mentioning gold in the most positive light possible. Not only saying, this is money, this is good, this is great, go get it. Here's your economy. It creates the entire economic history of the world, all the way down to heaven. Heaven's bedecked with gold, just full of it. People are like, oh, the streets of heaven are paved in gold. Yeah, true. And then, you know, people make sarcastic jokes about Peter, you know, saying, oh, you know, it's basically like bricks. It's worthless. Not true. Not true at all. It's very desirable. Even in heaven, because it's the most pure, beautiful, phenomenal element, which also tells you heaven is a physical place. That's something that I think mentally has been kind of weird to me to comprehend, is it's a physical place. Jesus ascended, okay? Jesus also discussed what's below us, you know, which is really weird. He discussed descending into the earth, down, you know, downward into the earth. And he discussed that as what? A temporary holding place. It's interesting. The Dead Sea Scrolls that inspired Lord of the Rings mentions numerous times that there's something below us, that there's life below us. We have stories in the Mishnah that Noah and Enoch buried or locked up, the giants, the Nephilim, the byproduct of the mixture of the sons of God with the daughters of man. And it said it took, when it talks about the sons of God, it says they took for themselves any of the daughters of men they chose. Now, that doesn't mean they raped them. That means these guys were good looking. There was something special about them. They're pretty, I guess you could call it if you're a woman. There's something special. They had a power that we don't have. They probably were incredibly well structured, we'll put it that way. You know, and so we've got, you know, Christ's descent into hell and, you know, references over and over again of the fact that he went down into hell. You know, Paul in 4:9 said that Christ our Lord descended into hell after he offered his life on the cross, and then that he ascended to heaven. Peter said in Acts 2 that God raised up Christ, having loosed the sorrows of hell, as it was impossible that he should be holden by it. Christ loosed the Old Testament saints from hell. And they go down, and he stole the keys of Hades and so on and so forth. So there is something down below us. So let's keep moving here. This is something I got to work on. Ha ha. All right. So I talked about precious metals. Folks, you want to know what's going on. You want to know what to do with your money. You're confused. You're not sure, right? You buy metals. You buy precious metals-based assets. I had a gal call here recently, and she said, you know, she'd bought stuff a while ago and said, you know, that, you know, we talked about the fact that I had been discussing the solidity, firmness of precious metals, holding level, holding solid precious metals-based assets. Volatility is very minimal. They're up and down, up and down, up and down, but within a very tight bandwidth. This has been going on for quite a while now, for a couple of years. That's good news. That's packing down the dirt. And they do fluctuate, but they fluctuate with the change in the strength of the dollar. Okay? So the bottom line is that precious metals, they're holding their own. They're packing down the dirt. They're holding firm. They're holding steady. And they're keeping their own. Okay? And so, our stock markets are crazy, etc. You, whether you like it or not, you at least diversify. You build a portfolio. You bring in your money. You let us build your portfolio. I'm going to be honest with you. It's a painful time for me. I have a tremendous inventory that has a lot of it has dropped in value. Quickly, in a stair-step fashion. Metals move in a stair-step fashion. Precious metals-based assets move in a stair-step fashion. In other words, they sit, everything's fine, and boom, overnight, down they go. That's all the pricing is based upon, you know, dealer bids. What dealers are willing to pay for a product. We have secure dealer networks that show exactly what they're bidding and how, you know, they derive it and how many they want and all that sort of stuff. So you've got to be aware of the markets in order to participate in this sort of situation without getting burned. Okay, so let's keep rolling. Precious metals have grown in value by, 3,000 to 4,000% since their deregulation in 1971 by Nixon. Nothing else has quite done that, okay? If you just do a straight division, that's 100% a year. Well, obviously that ain't the case because it's compounded. But we've discussed this. I want to buzz through this real quick. They've risen, over 600% since 9/11, while the Dow Jones and S&P 500 have increased less than 20% overall. With an inflation-adjusted base. So, but right now we've got the S&P 500. We've got these paper indexes falsely positive, looking real good, making you think things are pretty hunky-dory, when in reality they're really not, okay? So, you can have money in it, more power to you. Unfortunately, it's not real money, it's fake money, and you don't want to do that. So if we go to get a proper understanding, and I've discussed this over and over, this is why I've kind of avoided covering it again, but I've had so much of a request from people that they're like, you got to get back to that. So if you look at $10,000 invested in precious metals on January 1 of 2000, okay, is worth over $60,000 today. $10,000, and this was written a couple years ago. $10,000 invested in the best stocks January 1 of 2000 was worth less than $12,000 when this was written. So, without getting into great detail, the metals have done well. They've stayed, the metals and coins and balanced portfolios, they've done okay. We've also gotten sickly wholesale. I mean, just to a point where we wholesale to you, the consumer, at a level that you wouldn't even believe. I mean, we cut you a ton of slack. So the Dow Jones and S&P 500 indexes are artificially manipulated by removing and replacing poor performing stocks. Okay, so we've discussed that. You understand that the indexes are phony. They get doctored with all the time. The consumer price index is what they use to calculate inflation. Okay, Clinton removed food, transportation, real estate, and energy costs. Okay, the expenses that were excluded. And it was done on purpose. And I remember it all too well because I was studying economics before that. I was blown away. I had a friend leave the Consumer Price Board. Okay, it was a handful of people. This guy was brilliant. He had his PhD in economics, but he was brilliant. But the problem was he was a Montana boy. So he grew up with the attitude that if you don't work, you don't eat kind of a thing, right? He was not a socialist. It really blows my mind to hear men who are women who are economists try to justify socialism. They do it for political purposes only. It's completely contrary to everything that makes sense economically in a normal fashion. It's just wrong and it doesn't work and it's not right. So the consumer price index is false. When they tell you inflation's 1 or 2%, the biggest problem that you're up against, folks, is the fact that you do not have the ability to keep up with that with either your savings or raises an income. The only arena or sector that I've seen that's kept up is construction. And builders have been charging more and more and more. We bought a house that needs a lot of TLC, a lot of help, and we basically need to, you know, we're putting a lot of time and energy and effort into it. However, I've got, you know, I'm on the hunt for the right builder. I've got builders available, but they're these big powerhouses. They want to do time and materials. They know our old house looked like we were doing all right. And, or he does, and you just got to watch that they, you know, they take advantage of you. We run into that. A good friend of mine's uncle owns land or owns a beautiful home on Lake Washington. He calls it the $1 million driveway. If he's going to get a quote from a contractor, they'll quote him $7,000 for something that should be two. So what he's done is he's gotten where he'll take pictures of what needs to be done. He'll take all the measurements and he'll meet them at a restaurant. And they don't like it. They want to know where it is. I have another individual I'm familiar with who did the same exact thing. He wanted a bunch of mirrors put in an exercise room. They were quoting him $6,800, $6,300. So finally, a guy who helped him out got all the measurements, went to their places of business a couple years later, and they wanted to know, where is it at, where is it at, where is it at, and he wouldn't tell them. He ended up getting the exact same job. One company offered bid $6,800 about maybe, well, it'd been a long time. It'd probably been 6 years. They billed or bid $6,800, and he ended up getting it done for $1,800 just because they didn't know where it was. I don't know why I'm telling you all that. But it's just information. Since 9/11 of 2001, the excluded items, okay? Remember we said food, transportation, real estate, and energy costs have been taken out of the consumer price index? Those items alone have inflated. People debate and argue and about what, you know, it is. But, you know, I've seen very convincing arguments that it's 10%. But to me, it's like, how can it be 10%? Eventually, that would consume so much. But I've heard 6, 8, 10, 12, whatever. So say 6 or 8%. Who cares? When they're telling you inflation's 2% and your real cost of living is going up 8, you're in trouble. You're in deep trouble. And that trouble's coming your way. I don't know of a lot of employers that give true cost of living increases. Some of them do, but they'll base it on the consumer price index. So those items have gone up, you know, 3 to 4 times the consumer price index. We discussed stagflation, the price of goods increasing while interest rates decrease. Now, we're coming out of that hole now. We're letting rates go up. Why? Well, folks, I don't fully understand the construction boom. But, you know, maybe it's people who have stocks that have exploded that they want out. Maybe they got enough brains. I don't know. But I can tell you what's going to happen next. These people, and all I know is I know a lot about Coeur d'Alene Waterfront because I have a lot of friends doing building out there and real estate. The one thing that I see coming is taxes. These people build these houses, spend money like wildfire, and it's not a pretty picture. So it's eventually going to bite them. It's going to get them because of inflation. Our deficit, that is one that I cannot even believe. The U.S. debt clock, I'm going there now, is, let's see where we're at on the deficit. Let's see how we're doing. Let's see if everything's all better now. Oh, darn it. It's not. Shucks. I mean, our deficit, folks, is over $22 trillion. $22 trillion. $22 trillion. How many times do I have to say it? Do you even know what that means? The answer is no, you don't. Okay? So if you take 22 trillion, I'm going to do this, which is what, 12 zeros? Yes, it is. And then you divide by our 300 million citizens. That alone is $73,000 for every man, woman, and child. We've just passed the point where, oh, that's interesting. Why did that about fry? We've just passed the point where our individual debt is over $1 million for every man, woman, and child in America. Does that sound good to you? The answer is no. We're in deep, okay? So here's the thing. What do you want? I mean, do you want to watch your money erode? Do you want to watch it in hyperinflate? Because you've got two ways out of what we've done. One way, like I said, is hyperinflation. Secondly, is bankruptcy or vice versa. Either way, it's the same thing. People end up as broke as they can physically imagine, which means the dollar becomes zero. We've seen it in the Weimar Republic. We've done all kinds of things in this country to avoid it. And it's just an inevitable amount of time. You know, I've been looking at U.S. Historical charts of the deficit. And I mean, it's really interesting to see how far we've come and how bad it is and how, you know, it is really not a good situation. We, you know, when we were, under Bush, well, you go back to Clinton in the 90s, I mean, we were down at a couple trillion dollars. I mean, we could have so easily paid that off, but they didn't want to. Why? You know why? Because they lose all control. They have the Federal Reserve System is part of the Keynesian economic system, which is part of socialism and Marxism, and we have implemented all 10 of the planks of communism in America. Now, am I negative? Oh, I'm negative and down and out and blah, blah, blah. Trump's got to say America's great again. Everything's fixed. Life is good. Everybody's happy. But you and I both know that's not good. I know so many working people that can't make ends meet. I mean, what do? You help them out here and there. But it's hard. It's hard on everyone. I know people. I know a husband and wife that one works at FedEx and one's a nurse. And I've known them quite a while. And over the last 10 years, you know, their whole lifestyle's changed. They've had to downsize their vehicles. They've had to downsize their house while their pay has hypothetically gone up. So it's, you know, it's just what under Bush we could have got out. Obama tricked Bush into the TARP funds or the bailouts or whatever you want to call it, and then put it on the back of the taxpayer and blamed it on Bush. And said Bush left him this terrible economy. Why no one would ever blame it on 9/11, I still don't understand. I mean, there's no question 9/11 was the precursor to all of it, right? So we've got, you know, stagflation we discussed. Inflation is the hidden tax that destroys the middle class. Monetary inflation is the creation of money from thin air, well, or just an increase in monetary supply. And it's basically institutionalized counterfeiting, right? It's theft. No economy can benefit from increasing the amount of theft. Our deficit is approaching, we're over 22 trillion. Our total unfunded liabilities. I got to go look at this. Our total unfunded liabilities now, as I've said, is over $200 trillion. So just in unfunded liabilities, you owe about $700 and some thousand dollars for every man, woman, and child. That's bad. That is BAD bad. Unfunded liabilities we've discussed, U.S. dollar performance. The dollar's lost over 99.5% of its spending power since the Federal Reserve was enacted. Accelerating threats to our constitutional privacy through Google, you know, Yahoo, everything. You know, this was first brought out by whatever his name was, Snowden, and they made him the biggest villain on earth. You know, and I mean, it had to be brought out. People didn't understand it. The media didn't know how to handle it. You know, they say he's a traitor. You go watch, you know, government history. People that step forth and speak, they say he should have just spoke up. Yeah, right. He would have ended up with lead poisoning. And that's a joke because bullets are made out of lead. He would have been dead. There's no question. I know a number of people who have literally had the black cars following them and the black helicopters. I've seen the black helicopters at night shining the stuff through the walls. And, you know, when we lived out in this Aubrey White State Park where they used to do their night training and night practice, I saw something one night where a helicopter came right to the edge of the forest and was pitched up, you know, with the back end way up. And these two guys with huge helmets with air things coming out were staring right in my window. I yelled at my wife, get down, get down, get down. My automatic response. But the bottom line is, had they chosen at that point to go after us, it wouldn't have mattered anyway. They'd have got whatever they want, and they'd have probably, you know, blown the house up in the meantime, which is maybe one of the problems with having wood houses. People argue that our construction is, it's not designed to last long term. We've talked about the dollar performance. China, you know, wants more than anything a new world reserve currency to replace the dollar. They just absolutely want it. They don't like, you know, we, under the Bretton Woods Act of 46, we forced everybody to use the dollar as the gold standard for the oil bourse. That now is so unpopular with so many countries, they hate it. You know, we've got the dot-com craze. And back in the 90s, that was a one-time casino boom that was generated by transferring our debt addiction globally. It will never return. Now, what is driving the market up? Hyperinflation. The hyper creation of every penny anybody wants. Trump is a populist. He's running a business, and what he does is he looks at it, he looks at the way it runs, he just goes with the way it runs. He's not there to break the system. He's there to just make it run as well as he can under the auspices of what he's been given. And that's why he's not a constitutionalist per se, although he does stand up for a lot of constitutional specifics. Then we get into John Maynard Keynes, and I hate being out of time. It really gets old. But he was the architect of Keynesian economics. And he said, quote, the best way to destroy, see if I have time here. Yeah, I do. The best way to destroy the capitalist system, okay, he hated it, is to debauch the currency or to ruin the currency, weaken it by a continuing process of inflation. Governments can confiscate secretly and unobserved an important part of the wealth of their citizens. So let me repeat that. He says the best way to destroy the capitalist system is to destroy the currency. By a continuing process of inflation, governments can confiscate secretly and unobserved, you don't know it's happening to you, an important part of the wealth of their citizens. Folks, this is where we're at right now. Precious metals are private, anonymous, transportable, and immediately liquid anywhere at any time. Avoid, don't buy them on paper, buy them in hard assets, okay? Call Coins plus 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN. Give us a Google 5-star review. Get a free, really nice silver dollar, Morgan. get your money squared away, please. I mean, do the right thing now. I mean, give us a call. Let us explain. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.